Welcome to Queer Writers of Crime, featuring interviews with renowned LGBTQ authors and up-and-coming talent in mystery, suspense, and thriller novels. I'm your host, Brad Shreve, and Justine is here to give her weekly recommendation. Justine, I have to make an apology.
Uh-oh.
Was it last week that I told you you were no longer on the show?
I have the trauma is going to live in my head, and it's going to, like, I'm going to remember it as every week of my life that you told me I wasn't going to be on the show anymore.
It was 1 or 2 weeks ago, and Gregory Ash and I were chatting, and he brought it up. I said, I think Justine thought I was being serious because she got dead silent. He goes, Brad, I thought you were serious. I couldn't believe you were doing that. I said, Jeff, I am not cruel. I wouldn't do it on the air. I wouldn't do it on a tweet.
He wouldn't do it on.
I would change my phone number.
Yeah, that's right. Or on those weeks when I'm hard to schedule and we're trying to get a segment in, you'd be going, oh, well, okay, let's just leave it off this week. And all of a sudden it's being left off forever.
Yeah, no. We won't do that. She's here to stay, folks.
Thank goodness.
And now before we get to your books, I have a lot of stuff to cover in a short amount of time, so you have time to your books. I'm going to try and go fast, but I don't want to sound like I'm doing a grocery list. So I need you to pop in with some witty banter rather than your usual gibberish. Okay.
Oh, okay. Wait. Let me find the witty banter book. Okay. I got it. I got it open to the announcement critique time.
Okay, good. First thing I want to do is I had a listener that was angry with me over Marshall Thornton's interview. And he was angry because he couldn't believe that I didn't ask Marshall when the next Pink's video comes out. And I think he's going to regret that I asked.
You know, you miss those opportunities.
Well, I got in touch with Marshall. I asked him and he goes, I have a lot of projects this year. It probably won't be till 2022.
Well, see, that they were probably going to be really disappointed in that answer now, and they're going to call and complain again.
Yeah, that's why I said he probably wish he didn't ask.
Yeah.
So, and we're going to go talk a little bit about the Writing a Review prize drawing for the $50 gift card.
Yes.
Okay. We keep talking about it every week.
But we got some entries this week. There was like dead silence for a long time.
Yeah, we've got quite a few all of a sudden. Yeah, and not just Amazon. There's some, or not just Apple. There's some others too. But it is now open to non-U.S. citizens.
Wonderful. Really wonderful.
The primary reason I can do that, you and I cannot pull up Apple in other countries. It's just the way Apple has it set up. So I can't tell if somebody in Australia has given us a review.
Right.
But I was able to sign up for a site, and it scours the internet around the world, and it brings all the reviews, no matter where people live.
But now people have got to like tell you what their username is still.
Yeah, that's still an issue. I've got quite a few. All we have is a username and not a person's name. So please email us and use the contact page on the website and let us know who you are so that when you win, or if you win, you're going to be in the drawing.
Right.
And also, as far as the gift card, I was saying a $50 Visa gift card, and Visa, where you buy the card is the only country it can be used. So obviously that is out. So it's going to be an Amazon card, found a way to be able to buy Amazon cards in other countries. If you live in a country where you can't get anything from Amazon, there's other options. We can go to a Starbucks card or a Costco card. We'll find something.
Right.
Whatever we find, it's going to be $50 worth.
Okay.
And here's the thing. In the show notes, I made it very easy. There's a link. If you look at it right now, there's a link that says review, I think. Leave a review is what it says. And all people have to do is click on that link, and it will display all the phone apps that they use that accept reviews.
I think they can figure out the process after. I mean, it's probably much harder to listen to a podcast when you're not listening to podcasts already than it is to leave reviews. So we can trust them, I think.
We'd rather you listen to us rather than reviews anyway. And we love reviews. We're just trying to push right now because we have, thousands. We have hundreds of listeners every week. And
so you could say thousands. Who's going to know?
Last week, we had 10,000 downloads.
Wasn't that great?
Yeah. They'll never know whether that's right or wrong. So definitely Sean E. in Canada, you were the first person outside the U.S. And so you need to let us know what your name, what your real name is. And I got to tell you what Sean E. said, because he started off the review very nicely. And his first sentence was, "And I don't even qualify for the contest. That's okay. I love this podcast."
That's great.
So that was very nice. Sean, that was sweet of you. We appreciate it.
Now, I haven't seen that review. I don't know if it came up in your app sweep. I went and looked at iTunes and didn't see it. So maybe you want to like add a couple of those onto the website.
Yeah, I'll send it to you anyway. You can't see it because it's in Canada, like I said.
Right.
But I have it, so I'll send it to you. And actually, that's it.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, okay. Golly. Wait a minute. I dropped the witty banter book. Okay. Are we ready to go on?
Yeah. You didn't give me enough witty banter, but that's okay. I'll make up for it with you.
Well, let me just put one more of my own pitch out there. If you read any of the books that I recommend and you like it, I would like to hear from you. And if you don't like it, I probably would like to hear from you too, because I'm sitting here making recommendations on the assumption that, you know, people are going to pick them up and read them and they're going to like them. And I don't know if our readers have preferences that are different than mine. I kind of like a little paranormal. Maybe there's nobody out there who likes paranormal. I would like to hear back if you picked up any of the books you've read that you picked up just because you heard them on here. I would like to know what you thought of the books. So if people want to send us a note with that or call our voicemail number. What is our voicemail number?
There is no voicemail number. It's actually easy. And I would love to see people use the voicemail for this. All they have to do is go to the website, either on the phone or on a PC or a Mac. And in the bottom right, there's a microphone. And they click that and they can leave a message.
Yeah, I think that's good.
It doesn't work on Chrome right now. They're trying to fix it. But every other browser works.
Oh, good. Good. See, so people should do that. Maybe we'll even play some of them on the air so people can hear something other than our voices and our guest voices.
If we're not making it clear, folks, we want to hear from you.
Yeah. We're lonely. We're out here in a pandemic talking to each other on a computer.
In a rainy California day.
And missing the football playoffs.
Is that the one with the bat or the guys that wear the things across their face?
Things across their face, Brad.
Oh, okay.
Things across their face. Fortunately, I'm missing the Packers game right now. And the good news is that I'm a Bills fan, so I'm going to be off in time to watch the Bills game.
Well, I'm not much of a football fan at all. I love baseball because I think baseball players are hot in their uniforms. Football players have too much stuff on them. You can't tell what they look like anyway.
Okay, so.
What do you have?
What book am I doing today? Rock Island Lines, A Frank Dodge Mystery by Dean Klinkenberg. Let me do my usual caveats. You know, when I say, oh, this is paranormal, this is that and the other thing. This book, the author is in his about the author. He lives with his husband, I think, in, you know, somewhere up in those middle states, Iowa, Michigan, one of those. I'm sure I'm going to offend a bunch of our readers, and maybe you should cut that out.
They call them flyover states.
No, they don't call them flyover states, Brad. We call them flyover states. Yeah, we never did get complaints about the people who were offended by my knowledge of Canadian history being weak. But I have a feeling we're going to get complaints about the flyover states.
And almost half our listeners are outside the U.S., so watch what you say.
Oh, gosh, I hope I didn't offend any of them in those flyover countries. Anyway, the writer is gay, and the book comes up in LGBTQ+ mysteries category on Amazon. And let me just say, I am really glad that you went with Queer Writers of Crime and did not pick up the name that had LGBTQ+, because I can read it, I can write it, but saying it is, it's just never going to slip off my tongue in the middle of a conversation.
I will tell you this. I spent probably hours trying to figure out how to do LGBT.
Yes.
Right. It just didn't sound right. Didn't sound right at all. Didn't roll off the tongue. And I get tongue-tied when I say LGBT.
Yes, I do too. So we would have really been stumbling for months to come. Anyway, I think it's good. They used to have gay mysteries, and they used to have, and I think they still have some some programming things where there's still some of those categories laying around, but the LGBTQ plus category is a relatively new addition to this Amazon site. And I think it's a very welcome addition.
Yes, I think so too.
So you would think that Frank Dodge is gay. And a little spoiler here, we find out this is the first book in a series. We find out later in the series that he is indeed gay.
Oh, okay. Hold on. I've got to say something about this.
Okay.
You commented once that I'm really against reading a book in the middle of a series.
Yes.
And I'm not.
More than once. Many a time.
Yes, many a time. I read many series, and I do sometimes pick and choose which book in the series I want to read. I'm okay with that as long as the book can be read as a standalone.
I see.
There can be an overlying arc in the background, but still I should be able to read that book. And don't ever Yes. give me a cliffhanger. If you give me a cliffhanger, my Kindle goes out the window.
Then you got to go out and find it. And it might be raining and you can't go out in the rain because you're in California. And then it's just a whole big mess.
Yeah. So in my books, and you did know I write books.
I've heard that rumor. I've read some of them two or three times, actually.
Well, nice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I only bring it up again because you said I don't pimp my books enough.
No, and you're really doing a very poor job of pimping your books because you haven't talked about what the names are.
Okay, well, I'll do that. The first one is A Body in a Bathhouse, which is available in Kindle, paperback, and in audiobook.
Yep.
And the second one is A Body on the Hill, which is in Kindle and paperback. Audiobook is coming this spring.
Wonderful.
Now you totally make me feel like I'm pimp. But anyway,
That's right.
You know, my book, you can read the second book without reading the first book, but it is still better to read the first book. And that's why, that's the way I intend the whole series to go. So does that clarify?
Yeah, sometimes I'll find a book. In a long series, though, sometimes you just got to, you know, if you're coming into the series, like it's book 12, pick up book 12 and read it. And, you know, unless you're going to have spent the next 6 months of your life getting to book 12, you got to start at the end.
At the end or the beginning? Oh, I see what you're saying.
Well, no, I mean, if there's 12 books out and you're new to the series and book 12 sounds interesting, you really don't want to start at book one and like have to read for 6 months before you get up to book 12.
I agree.
At that point, you may as well just pick it up and, you know, hope there isn't too much that you've missed.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, it's like a TV show. It's like, you know, any TV shows, you can always join in the later seasons, but some of them you really want to go back and watch in the beginning. Anyway, I'm sure all of our listeners know all about series and how they actually read them. We're not really breaking ground, are we?
No, we aren't. And poor folks are sitting here saying, Bradway, shut up. It's time for Justine's recommendation.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So back to my book.
Which is Rock Island.
Rock Island Lines.
Okay.
It's a Frank Dodge mystery.
And you were talking about Frank being gay.
We're talking about Frank being gay. We find out later in the series that he is gay. There's no mention of this at all in the first book. There were a couple of enigmatic moments at some point. He's talking to a friend and says, you know, well, I don't really have a house or a home anymore. And then he, you know, he's also twisting a ring on his left finger when it's obvious he's single. But there's no indication of the gender of his prior partners or nor does he really engage in anything one way or another that would indicate his orientation. But rest assured that he is gay. And, you know, in real life, people who are gay don't have to go out and advertise it every single moment of the day.
I actually, every 15 minutes, I go, I'm gay.
That's you, Brad. I don't know why you're pimping that you're gay and not pimping your books, but okay.
Moving on.
Moving right along. I've kind of got lost in my witty banter book. All right. So Frank is a former therapist who got burned out and didn't really burn out over time, but he just lost the will to do that when one of his patients committed suicide. And since then, he's been traveling around the world and not in tourist destinations. He spent a long time down in South America, Central America, in the dingy neighborhoods, hanging out with the locals, eating the local food, and not being able to speak the language very well, but figuring out how to make himself understood. And he's kind of got something happened down there, and he got kind of, well, I really should go back to my own country. And then he discovered that he really didn't have a home, but his home was the Mississippi River, that anywhere along the river, he felt comfortable. In big cities along the river, in the small towns, the life of the Mississippi, and the Mississippi is as much a part of this book as he is, and the crime is, and the victims, and it's the other characters. I feel like I've visited a lot of the river based on the stuff I've read in this book. He does a very good job of setting place and tone and giving you a feeling that this is not, you know, generic small town America. This is really a place that's rooted in real life and rooted in the river. So he has turned to writing, journalism, even though he's not really a journalist. He has self-published a book on Frank Looney, who was a mobster of the Al Capone generation. He's a fictional mobster, but he's of the same generation as Al Capone. And when he did that, he was interested in the fact that Looney had grown children, and he always wondered what happened. And turns out somebody got a lead on a descendant of Looney, and now Frank has set out to interview him and get his backstory and see if he can work this up into some kind of article. But he doesn't want the guy to know that's why he's interested in him. So he arranges a random meeting in a bar. Spend the evening together going to bars and diners and talking. And then the next morning, the guy turns up dead. Frank ends up being a person of interest. And it certainly looks like he did it. So he has to, as many amateur sleuths do, he gets involved mostly to prove to the police that it's not him.
Okay, so when they left the bar, did they go together to one place or did they go their separate ways?
I am not going to tell you.
Oh, okay, that's important to the plot. Okay, never mind.
I mean, really, this is explored over many a chapter. He keeps a number of the facts to himself, depending on who he's speaking to. And, you know, all of that is spoilers. You don't get to ask for spoilers.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll shut my mouth.
But, you know, everybody's suspicious except for the one guy that he has known since they were in eighth grade together. But everybody else, you don't know if they're good or bad or what their interest in this whole event is. So he is in a lot of danger all along. And so the book gets a thrilling recommendation. It is firmly in that thrilling recommendation category. So if you like the other books I've recommended that I have as thrilling, you will like this one. It's got a lot of twists and turns, but it's a definite whodunit. And that's it for this week, because you've got to get on with Ms. Poe and Mr. Ash.
Yes, but I want to do one thing before we do that. And listeners, just bear with me. This is kind of personal, but I just have this gnawing feeling I should do it. This is a message to my daughter, Eros, in Berlin, who's there to get her master's degree. I just wanted to tell her hello, and I love you, and I hate the pandemic made it so that we couldn't see each other this year or last year. Let's hope this year we can make it happen. But I love you.
That would be nice.
It would be. We have plane fares and everything.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's it. I'll get on with Ash and Poe. And lots of giggling.
I'll talk to you next week.
Hi, this is Brad. Not only do I interview authors, I write novels too. Check out my Mitchell Riley mystery series on my website, bradshreve.com. Hey, Greg.
Hey.
Hey, CS.
Hello.
Want to know one of my pet peeves?
Only one of them.
Yeah. Only one. Maybe I'll get to more later, but there's one right at the beginning. It drives me crazy when a host says, I introduce to you a person who needs no introduction, and then they go ahead and do an introduction.
I want you to guess the entire time who they're talking to. That would be an awesome
Carol.
Episode.
Oh my goodness.
What, guess what their introduction is? Or guess about them?
Yeah, no, just no names, and you just have to go by voice and what they're talking about and figure out who it was because they didn't need an introduction.
Isn't that kind of like that show where they wear outfits and sing?
Yes, but more gay.
What? That show's pretty gay to begin with, some of those outfits. What is the name of that? It's
The Masked Singer or something?
Singer? The Masked Singer, okay.
Ironically, I've never seen an episode, but I do know what we're talking about.
I'm very happy to say I've never seen an episode, nor have I ever seen that Tiger King or Lion King, whatever it is. Very proud of that. And actually, that would be a good game show to introduce somebody and just let the audience guess who it is.
That's yeah. Right.
Well, I'm not going to go that route. So instead, I'm going to say today's guests are C.S. Poe and Gregory Ash. Two authors who need no introduction.
Thank you, Brad.
Hello, and welcome to Queer Writers of Crime.
Thanks for having us.
Hi.
When I pull Amazon's top-selling LGBT mystery novels up, the two of you usually have books splashed all over the page. So that's part of the reason I don't feel introduction is necessary, but it kind of is because not everybody knows you.
Yeah.
But they'll learn about you as we talk. So speaking of all over the page, Greg, I noticed that you have some of your books like Pretty Pretty Boys on sale for only 99 cents. Is this a sale or do you plan those prices to run indefinitely?
I think those are going to be indefinite. I try to put the first book in each series at 99 cents. And then I also have a few short story collections that are 99 cents. But yeah, those aren't going to change anytime. It's just a way to get, you know, people a chance to try it if they haven't picked up one of my books before.
Yeah, exactly. Good move. And if you haven't read any of Greg's work, I highly recommend you take advantage of it. Pretty Pretty Boys is the first of Hazard and Somerset, right?
Yes, that's right.
So that is definitely one you want to jump into.
Oh, thank you.
We're going to get around to talking about the novel you've collaborated on. Right now, in place of the introduction, starting with C.S. Poe, or Carol, I'll probably call you from time, I'd like each of you to give a bit about your writing background, such as when you first published and what novels or series you're most known for.
Oh, boy. Okay. What year is it? 2021. So I was...
Actually, it's 2020 take two so far.
So I was first professionally published in 2015. And it was just a contemporary romance short story, like 25 pages, like nothing to call your mom about, but it was my first professionally published piece.
Well, is it one of those that you see on Amazon that's 20 pages and they're selling it for $3.99?
I did not sell it for $3.99. No, I'm not that
okay.
person.
Okay, good.
But it was, you know, the gateway to more after that. And since then, I'm now at, I think, 17 books. I don't have nearly a big a backlist as Greg, and we can talk about that. because one of us sleeps and one of us doesn't. And it's me that sleeps.
Good for you.
But I'm probably most well known for the Snow and Winter Mystery series, which is about antique dealer in New York City who moonlights as an amateur sleuth and his NYPD detective boyfriend, and they solve murder mysteries in the city that are always based on Victorian artifacts and oddities and bizarre mystery, which is something I usually integrate into all of my books in some capacity because I love history, especially New York history. So I'm always trying to find a unique way to include that in the books. And that was the first one, and it took off from there.
And I think you just recently released another one. So I'm presuming that's going to go for a while.
I did. It's got mystery elements in it, but it is a steampunk series. Oh. But it does take place in New York with a sort of mystery subplot to it.
But what about Snow and Winter?
Oh, well, that series is complete, but there's a short story collection that is up for pre-order, which is a compilation of all of the shorts that I've written over the years for that series, including a few new ones. So there's a few new like mini mysteries in it that span the entire timeline of the series.
So the series is done, but they're not gone forever.
They're not gone forever. Exactly.
Is there another series that what's the currently one, the steampunk one, even though it's not mystery?
The steampunk one, it takes place in an alternate universe, 1880s New York City. But I do have a new contemporary mystery series that will be starting in the summertime.
Okay. Did you want to tell us anything about it or keep us in suspense?
I'm keeping a lot of the information under wraps, but I can tell you that the series is called Memento Mori, which is based on the Latin phrase, remember that you will die. It has a lot of that element to it, a lot of remembering mortality and remembering death is inevitable as a general theme to it. And it takes place in New York, and the two lead characters are detectives. But from there, I'm keeping it under wraps until I get a little bit deeper into the book and start releasing details.
Okay. Well, not to give a spoiler, I'm going to take a wild guess that there is a body involved in this novel.
There are so many bodies, Brad. So many bodies.
Oh, I love lots of bodies. And in many ways. But we won't go back. Greg, it's your turn.
Okay. And it was, so you asked a little how we got started. Is that right? And then...
how did you get started publishing, and then what are you most known for?
Okay. So, yeah, I have been writing consistently for about 13 years. And as soon as I started, that was kind of when the Amazon self-publishing had started to hit the news.
Practical. And so,
yeah, it was really kind of within reach. And so I started self-publishing everything that I wrote. And
Amazon's been successful with that plan.
Yes, they really have.
Sorry to throw you off. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. Most of that stuff I've taken down at this point because I was kind of writing across different genres and trying different things and trying to find my, you know, my voice and my style and what I wanted to write about. So when Pretty Boys had some success, that's the first book in my Hazard and Somerset series. When that took off, I, started writing the rest of that series, and then I started to pull down some of that earlier stuff. So I think that's the series that people know me the best for, is that Hazard and Somerset book, or the Hazard and Somerset books. I also have the Borealis investigations and a couple others that, you know, that have been in the gay mystery category. So
Borealis is my favorite.
Oh, thank you.
I think of Hazard and Somerset because it's talked about so much.
I think that is the one that's probably the most read. Yeah, I think that's the one most people know about.
And Gerald, I definitely, when I think of you, I definitely think of Snow and Winter. So
Yeah. We all have that one.
Yeah.
Now we'll get straight to the first novel that you wrote together that's available to purchase, and that's A Friend in the Dark. Would you like to give us a summary of the story, Greg?
Sure.
Carol, feel free to butt in anytime.
So the book is called A Friend in the Dark, and it's the first book in the Auden and O'Callaghan mysteries. It's set in New York City, and the characters are Sam Auden and Rufus O'Callaghan. Sam is ex-army, but he's kind of a wanderer at this point. He's doesn't really have a home. And he's also kind of left the army under less than ideal circumstances. Rufus is a confidential informant for the police in New York City. And when police officer dies, who is Rufus's handler and one of Sam's ex-army buddies, Sam ends up in New York trying to get some answers and runs into Rufus. And then they take it from there to kind of figure out what's really happened to this mutual friend. Did I hit it right, Carol? Did I give?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
When you write mysteries,
it's almost like you wrote it, Greg.
Well, I just have to check. I just want to make sure I get it right.
Hey, when I mention the name of my book, I get it wrong all the time.
So. Brad, someone wrote me an email asking me about a moment in one of my books, and I just dashed off an answer because I was in a hurry. And she wrote back. She was so nice about it. She was like, "That's such a nice answer, except it's wrong here, here, here." And I was like, "Oh, well, I did write that book at one point."
Oh, my God.
I know.
Yeah. Hubby is just finished reading my second novel. And he will say something. And I'm like, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
That's my life's motto. I don't remember that.
Yeah. So I'm glad I keep a little bit of a Bible. Like, especially when he says I'm on chapter 14. And I'm like, well, what happens?
I had a narrator do that to me yesterday. He's like, here's chapter 8. I'm like, what happened in chapter 8? Why are we talking about this?
So Carol, yes. What more can you tell us about Sam and Rufus?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, Greg pretty much touched on the major elements of who they are for the reader to understand once they meet up in New York. He wrote one of the characters and I wrote the other character. And there are very minute moments of crossover. Like if we're focusing on one of them, one of their POVs in a chapter, one of us might write like a sentence. Rufus had done this or Sam had done this from that character's point of view. But we pretty much entirely, exclusively each wrote one of the lead characters and shared the entire supporting cast to the point mm-hmm. that I think it's almost gotten to the point we're not sure who wrote what anymore, which is a little sort of interesting for editing purposes because we don't want to touch each other's words, which is just polite. But at the same time, like, did I write this or you? Honestly, just delete it. Let's start over.
Well, it's interesting you each did a different character because looking at the feedback from your readers, they would say, oh, I could see C.S. Poe in this area. And then somebody would say, I could see Gregory Ashe in this area. What do you think exactly they mean by that?
Well, I'll tell you, let me jump in real quick before Carol gets going.
Okay.
Because I'm going to tell you what everyone blames me for that is not my fault, which the ending.
Everyone blames Greg for the ending.
Everyone blames any moment of suffering on me.
Yes.
And I did not write that ending. I just need that to be public record.
I wrote the ending. That was a Carol Poe. They said, I can tell that Gregory Ashe wrote this because of this ending. And I'm like, if only they knew.
And of course, you don't correct them.
Because really, like, because people don't really expect this, I guess, the emotional gravity that some of this book has. And that's true. That's not something that I typically write. My stuff, while it has a lot of emotional density to it, tends to be a bit fewer and farther between, I guess. But Greg is known for, like, you know, solving a mystery, catching the bad guy, tearing your heart out, ripping it to shreds, mending it back together. So people just assume that when your heart was broken, like, oh, well, Greg wrote this book. And I'm like, yeah, but I did that line that you're crying about. I just needed the vehicle in which to do it. And Greg was the perfect vehicle.
Well, Carol, I definitely see a strike of cruelty in you. So I'm not
it's surprised. There. Oh.
It may not be as clear, but it's there.
It's there. It's hidden right under the red hair.
Giving the ending, this is getting in a touchy area without trying not to give much away.
Mm-hmm.
But people read reviews, so I don't think it's too much. I noticed that there were quite a few comments not to expect a happily ever after or a happy for now. Knowing the two of you, I don't expect that's going to go on for long, but what brought you to that decision And did you think you were taking a chance?
No, I don't think we sorry, Greg. I'm just immediately gut instinct answering.
Yeah, go ahead.
He's so timid.
Well, we did sort of plan. We have four books for the series. We didn't get into the nitty gritty, which I know Greg does more than I do. So I appreciate the fact that he didn't plan every single beat of the book, or at least he didn't tell me, which is great because I don't want to know. But we did plan four books, and we planned basically a major arc of the character growth for each book that needed to happen. So there was, you know, the characters meeting, and then the next book focuses on this character, the next one on that character, and then there's a conclusion. So we knew what we were going for from the beginning and how long it would take to reach it. I don't think it was like a we're taking a chance thing, because we know what the ending's going to be. It's just, you know, it's a work in progress. There are human beings who make a lot of dumb mistakes while they're dealing with some really dangerous people in a dangerous city. And, you know, they'll get there eventually.
What has been overall your fans' reactions to, and you don't have to tell me if you don't want to give it away, but what have been their reactions?
I'm a bad one to answer that because I don't read reviews, and I also don't do much on social media. So I have a real limited sense of what that was. So I'll let Carol, I mean, if Carol, if you feel like you have a, yeah.
I mean, I think the most general response that I've had people on social media reach out to me to say is that I think, like, individually, they really liked Greg and they really liked me, and the idea of the two of us writing together really intrigued them, but they really didn't know what to expect because individually we do have very different styles and very mm-hmm. different sort of vibes and tones in our mysteries, mm-hmm. but that they were sort of shocked how well we work together as a team. And I think part of that is the literal process in which we wrote the books that made it this wholly unique third voice. And I think the fact that what we write together is a uniquely third distinct voice made it much easier for people to enjoy and for them to reach out and tell us that they enjoyed it.
Well, Greg, when somebody says they can see aspects of Carol in the book, C.S. Poe, what do you think they mean?
Oh, boy. Man.
If the answer's wrong, we're going to break up.
Right? I know. Well, you know, I know many people think of the snow and winter mysteries when they think of Carol's work. And I know that one of the facets of those books that draws attention is kind of this arcane knowledge that Sebastian in particular has. And I do think some of that comes through in Rufus's voice. You know, Rufus is not in the same way. He's not interested in the same things as Carol's character, Sebastian, but he does have kind of that eccentricity of knowledge. And I would also say that I think one thing people associate with Carol's Snow and Winter books is the kind of intensely vibrant setting of the city of New York City, and that also comes through. If Carol's going to talk about me, she can describe how I feel about the city.
Yeah, I was going to ask her about you.
But the only other thing I would say about, I do think that the pacing of the book it's not exactly the way Carol paces the Snow and Winter books, but it is probably closer to her pacing than it is to my pacing.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah. So maybe those would be kind of at least a starting point for what people might see of Carol in this book.
So she set the pacing and the ending. So basically she ran all over you.
you know, I like to let the expert guide me. So I let Carol guide me.
Oh, God.
So Carol, what about Greg? What are they seeing in the book?
I would say that there are particular elements of prose that stand out as something that is distinctly Greg's voice. He has this really incredible way of painting a picture that's very, very unique. It's not the way that I write, and it's not the way a lot of people write, It's just, it's everything that's a little terrible and a little wonderful and a little beautiful and gritty. And it's all combined into a really poetic sort of rhythmic sentence that I don't write. So when those moments happen in the story, I think they stand out as something where Greg touched. And he brings an emotional depth and maturity to the writing that sometimes I really wish I was able to do myself, because there are just moments where I sit back and I'm like, man, what the hell am I doing? I can't talk like that.
That's not true. I got to jump in and editorialize. That's not true at all. As anyone who has read Carol's stuff knows, I just got to jump in and comment on that.
No, it's the very, very poignant emotional beats and prose that stands out as Greg.
Greg, that was very flattering, and I hope you feel feel honored. That was very nice. And
thank you, Carol. Yes.
Well, I love you.
I love you too. Thank you.
It's weird to me that the two of you can get along, since you're both kind of gloomy, gloomy sourpusses. And amazed you're not butting heads.
You guys like each other.
Oh my gosh, that was.
Maybe you enjoy each other's misery. I don't know what.
That was fantastic.
Honestly, we're both pretty dead inside, so.
Yeah. I think there's a certain, yeah, there is a certain level of negativity that we enjoy in the other one. I would agree with that.
I think that's necessary to be an author.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I think that's true.
I'm going to guess the two of you met at a conference and most likely GRL.
We did.
Now, for our listeners, GRL is an annual conference. It's writers, readers of LGBT romance.
Romance as a major, but like all genres that touch on any romantic elements are welcome. So like, even though we mostly write like mystery with a little, like with a subgenre romance, like we're still welcome there.
Oh, don't get defensive.
No, that's, I'm just explaining. It's not like, it's when you say romance, people think like contemporary romance, but it's the whole gamut, historical, mystery, thriller, paranormal, like everything's there. It's pretty crazy. But we did meet there at like, what was it? Like the opening banquet?
Yeah, we met.
Like I walked in and he just ran at me. He's like, I'm Gregory. Hi.
Brad, she is misrepresenting that moment.
That's pretty much what happened.
I strolled.
He rushed.
I, as gracefully and with a great deal of self-possession, stood from my seat and made my way around the table. I did meet Carol at the I introduced myself at the banquet, although we didn't talk much, right?
No, because there was like a speech going on.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
But you felt that connection from across the room.
That's right.
I fell in love with him immediately. I was like, oh, this is the guy that everyone's talking about who's been on my TBR for like 6 months that I just haven't gotten around to.
Oh my gosh. Well,
but then he was so nice, I felt bad that I hadn't read him yet, and I knew who he was. So I was like, oh fuck, I'm gonna buy Pretty Pretty Boys right now. And then I accidentally bought two copies. I was like, you're welcome. I bought two copies. And then I started reading it in the hotel room that night. And I was like, oh, damn, he's pretty good.
Oh. I didn't know that part. Well, thank you. That was
that happened.
I didn't know about that.
Back to the GRL. As you both know, because I repeat a lot, the rule for guests on my show is prime is prime.
Right.
Which means sex and romance are allowed in the novel as long as the primary focus is crime.
Right.
In my opinion, you both are very close to those wires meet. Greg, would you say that's a strategic choice?
You know, that's so difficult to answer. I wrote...
Let me say why I bring it up. I think a huge part of your success, other than both of you being great writers, is your ability to attract those devoted to mystery novels, as well as those devoted to romance novels, mm-hmm. and those that like both.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. I mean, so Brad, I agree with you. Like, I'm really grateful that I have a readership that is, you know, interested in my work and also voracious, you know, like they are willing to read a lot of books, and I'm really grateful for that. And those are, I think, for the most part, more romance readers than mystery readers, although mystery readers do tend to consume a lot of mystery books. So,
yes,
I mean, I think you're right in that analysis. It's difficult for me to answer that entirely because I wrote Pretty Pretty Boys and conceived of it as a mystery novel. Like it was never in my head that that was a romance novel, and or that it had elements of romance. And in fact, I know what you're gonna say. And then I also just really had no idea there was an LGBT mystery genre. Like I stumbled across it on accident when I was trying to figure out where to list it on Amazon. So it was really revelatory to me to find that not only were there people interested in reading a story like this that I had written, but that other people were writing stories like it.
Yeah, same here.
That was your experience as well?
Yeah, I only stumbled upon it because of Josh Lanyon. And I was like, this is the one individual in the entire universe that seems to be writing, like, who's, you know, alive and relevant, still actively working in the genre kind of thing, versus once I realized it opened the door to all these other names that I'd never heard of, going back, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, definitely same experience.
So would you say it was a strategic choice for you, Carol?
No, I just kind of wrote it and then realized like both mystery and romance readers enjoyed it. It was just like, that was just what I wrote. Mystery Nevermore is just, it was. And I was like, well, it's a mystery. I mean, it, you know, I know that it has sex in it and I know that it's got characters who fall in love, but like they're doing that outside of this mystery. They never would have met without this heart under the floorboards that leads to this mass murder in New York City. And then I found out like a lot of romance readers liked it because it had that extra element to character growth. When I was like, I mean, that's cool. I'm glad because I want to write a character who is like me and who does find love and acceptance in his life. But also, I do want him to get a little bloody. So it was just writing what I enjoyed. And it just happened to be enjoyed by two completely different genres at the same time. And I was like, that's a cool bridge to have.
Both of you are smarter than me.
I don't know about that.
As far as selling, I mean, so far in my novels, there's a touch of romance, but not nearly as defined as each of you have. In fact, Greg, I mentioned on the air to you when you co-hosted my interview with Alan Moran on the House of Mystery Radio show that I don't want to make it easy on my readers. I don't want to guarantee my readers a happily ever after or a happily for now.
And I think that's an acceptable thing to decide. You're going a much more classical mystery route, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just breaking away from if there are the tendrils of romance readers who have found it, they just need to understand that because there are distinct rules about romance, just as there are distinct rules about the archetypes of characters in mystery. And those two genres don't always understand each other. So it's a matter of making sure that those romance readers who infiltrated your book sort of understand that, and vice versa.
Greg asked me if I was going to kill Mitch off at the end. Well, it's written in first person, so he's not narrating. He's not narrating from heaven.
Brad. Challenge accepted. Do it.
I think that was
incredible.
I don't think that was me because I know the books are first person.
You asked me that.
Did I? Really?
It was you that asked me that. But I give this analogy a few weeks ago. I don't remember who I was interviewing. There was a movie called The Verdict that starred Paul Newman. It's a great movie. And he's a drunken, down and out lawyer in a dirty, dusty office. And he comes across this major case and wins it and wins not only what the family was, is a malpractice suit, and he wins not only what the family was asking for, the jury gives him substantially more. So in that sense, there's this big happily ever after. Just like in a mystery, there's always going to be the happily ever after because you know the sleuth is going to solve the crime. But what I mean when I don't guarantee a happily ever after, even with all that success, in the end of the book, even though he had a lot more money, he was still a down and out drunken attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't always grow. I'm not saying whether that's going to happen with my character or not. So please don't read into that. I'm just saying I'm not going to let you know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah. I mean, that's part of, I think, the growth of a character to begin with. It shouldn't be predictable.
Yes.
Because if it's predictable, why read the next book?
Very true. Back to A Friend in the Dark. How long did it take from your first inklings to collaborate to when you began writing it?
Well, we discussed collaborating at GRL, which was in October. That was 2019, right, Carol?
Yeah, we discussed like the concept, like what would be your ground rules?
Yeah.
And what would be your ground rules?
Yeah. And then we wrote most of it, I would say, like
over winter break.
Yeah. Like December, January.
Yeah.
After that. And then did it come out in the summer?
It came out in September.
Okay. Okay, sorry.
No, September or something.
I did all the vendor uploading, so I have better memory of dates.
Well, and
September 8th, I believe.
Thank you, Carol.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
It all stemmed from a Q&A at GRL, and It was just chaos from there.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that time, just to answer your question, Brad, a lot of that time was not active work time.
Right.
I think wrote it, and then we went back a few months later, revised it, and then...
Right, because it's a little dependent on when Greg's got availability. So, like, when he had availability, we wrote the whole thing, and then when his next break came, we edited, and then it went up.
Yeah.
Who spoke the first words or wrote the first text about the idea?
Well, I think I sent you something.
Greg.
I had, like, a fever dream.
Greg initiated all of it.
Yeah, I did. That's true.
Well, at GRL, I was on a Q&A panel. His was first, and I had sat in on it with like Josh Lanyon, Felice Stevens, and a few of our other friends. And then mine was immediately after in the same room. So we literally just switched chairs.
Mm-hmm.
And then the moderator had asked if anyone on the panel had ever done co-writing, and the two people who I was on the panel with had actually co-written together. And then he asked me, I said no, and he said, would you ever be interested? And I said yeah, but I've never found the right person to do it with. And then Greg was like this beaming ray of sunshine in the audience.
I think I raised my hand. Just
he did.
So the picture is complete and everyone knows that I have no self-control.
So it's all your fault, Greg.
It is.
And then I got a text message from him. He's like, so at like 2 a.m, I woke up because my long johns were hot and I had this idea for a book. And I was like,
what? Yeah, that probably didn't, I probably shouldn't have opened with that, but that was my message.
That was how we opened.
But I mean, I will say, although I raised my hand and although I did, kind of send those ideas off, you know, Carol really has handled almost all of the logistics of the book once it was written. I mean, she really is a master of that. So.
And talking about the logistics.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated about co-writers.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I just can't imagine. What was the writing process? How did you go about this?
Do you want to talk? It was Carol was the one who suggested it, but I mean, basically we just opened up a Google Doc and we both sat on it for the entire time we were writing. So there was no moment when, you know, we handed off chapter 3 to me and she wrote chapter 7. And
we literally wrote it together.
Yeah, we sat
in
there,
like 2 hour spurts.
Yeah.
So like, I might start a paragraph and then he might write a sentence and then I might write the sentence back and then he writes a paragraph. Like it literally created an entirely third voice. Mm-hmm. Because at this point, I can't even tell who wrote what anymore when we're editing. So I'm just hoping for the best.
Yeah.
That blows my mind.
Yeah, it was definitely, I mean, you know,
It's like professional role playing.
Carol's throwing that in my face because I said
it I is though. Say, he's not I did, wrong.
I did say that to her. But I will so I mean, Brad, I'll say I think I mentioned this in another interview, but it was hard for me because I do kind of relish the absolutism, the total control of writing as an art form, right? You know, I get to decide everything unless I'm writing with Carol. And the trade-off, though, is I got to learn, you know, a lot firsthand watching how she constructs a story. So
not the best compliment, because for the past 2 days at 5:30 in the morning, I've been writing something. And he's like, are you sure about that? And I'm like, I'll fix it later.
Well, and I got to ask, was there a moment where one of you said, hey, so-and-so, that is really shitty writing?
We said ever, it to ourselves, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about Greg. He could say what he wants about me, but mostly it's about very mean comments about myself in the text, like a little chat box that we have on the side if we have questions while we're writing. Usually the worst thing that happens is I forget whose POV we're in, so I'll just be like trotting along in Rufus's POV, and he's like, that's great, but isn't this a Sam POV chapter? And I'm like, shit, I'll fix it later.
I think that's happened both ways. I mean, I think fortunately that never happened. And in fact, we never really had any substantial disagreements about this book.
No, but at the most we're like, is this a good idea? Yes, no. And then we talked about it for like three sentences and then we come up with a better idea.
Yeah. And I think that worked. The part about the writing worked because we had both, by the time we did this, read enough of the other's finished product to know that whether it was, and I'm sure you know this as well, what just getting the first draft down is really the big battle, right? And then you can make it look presentable.
But Greg's the only person who's seen my writing before an editor has. And some days that terrifies me more than others. Like I look at what I write and I'm like, I can't believe I actually let him see this. But then at the same time, he's put enough trust in me because he's seen my finished product and vice versa. Like,
well, and I've texted you things. I mean, Brad, I'd be interested to hear what you like your process is like, but I mean, for heaven's sakes, I was writing one of my, you know, real overwrought prose descriptions. And one of the beautiful lines I wrote was a crow crowed like a crow or something like that. And I just sat there looking at it and I was like, well, I'm done, you know, like that's, I mean, so, and I sent that to Carol just because sometimes you write something so bad and it just, all you can do is be like, yeah, I just did that. And
that was the thing I did.
All I can do now is erase it and try again.
On a dark and stormy night, a crow.
Yeah.
Crow like a crow.
Is that your experience, Brad? I mean, what is your process like?
Well, I outline a lot.
Yeah.
And I just have to because I want to make sure each suspect gets equal billing as well as where to put the clues and red herrings.
Yeah.
But that being said, my outline at the beginning and what I write at the end may be two totally different things.
Right.
But I've got to start with that outline. And like quarter of the way through, I may change the outline to fit more where it's going. Mm-hmm. But I need more direction. Someday I'll try just doing it by the seat of my pants. It scares me.
See, and it's so interesting because I get terrified at the idea of plotting it. Like, I feel like I get like sweaty.
Yeah, I think so. I've written a fair number of my books, without plotting them. But I think, Brad, like you, I do tend more and more now to plot pretty thoroughly and then. Also, like you said, there's also a lot of adjustments as the story takes shape. You know, there's a lot of alterations and accommodations.
Yeah. In my first book, there was delay because I had these epiphanies and they actually turned into new chapters that I quickly had to write.
Oh, cool.
I already put my book up for pre-order.
Oh, yeah.
When all was said and done, my editor said, Those are the best chapters in the book.
Oh, cool.
I said, well, I always was told I work better under pressure, but I'm never going to do it on purpose.
Well, that's pretty cool, though.
Yeah. Someday I'll just upload a bunch of garbage and say, okay, I'm going to write and put it on pre-order and then write the book then.
Oh, oh, my God.
No, that will never happen. So, Greg, other than your next novel with Carol, what can we expect from you in the near future?
Yeah, I have a book coming out in 2 weeks. It's the last book in a series I have called The Lamb and the Lion. And those are contemporary mysteries set in Utah with a wildlife veterinarian and a con man. And so those are, it's called The Same End. And that wraps up that trilogy. And then after that, I'm going to be writing, I have a follow-up series, kind of like a season two to my Borealis investigations.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. So that'll take me through, I think, June or July, I think.
Well, your fan there is very happy to hear that.
I know. Oh,
I'm so psyched. My daily messages to him are about that book.
Okay. So CS, what do we expect from you?
After Interlude, which is the Snow and Winter short story collection that comes out in March, is going to be the first book in Memento Mori that I mentioned earlier, and it's called Madison Square Murders. I don't have a firm release date yet, just because I've literally just written the first page so far, but it's due out like late summer.
Getting to me, Greg, I mentioned to you on the interview that we did that I know my third book is going to go so much faster. Mm-hmm. In my first and second book, and you asked mm-hmm. why, and I said because everything's in my head. I have a good outline. Well, I lied.
Oh no!
I never publicly say these things.
Yeah, I know. I should know better. And I hate to bring out what's going on outside, but the pandemic has affected me more than I expected.
Yeah.
And I do hear a lot of authors say the same thing.
Yeah.
You think, oh, great, this is going to give me the opportunity to write a lot more. But it's this heavy negative feeling that makes it very mm-hmm. difficult.
Yeah, you have to bury your head so deeply in the sand just to be in that creative space. And if you don't bury yourself correctly, then you waste a whole day fretting and doom scrolling. So.
Exactly.
Although I did hear you say the title on a previous podcast, and maybe you said it on that interview in the House of Mystery, but it's a great title, Brad.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
It may change a little bit.
Oh, no. Okay.
No, it wouldn't be significant. And okay. I'll go ahead and say now, because it's on my website.
Oh,
a
okay.
Body, a Bear, and a Blade.
Yeah, that's a great title.
I may change it to A Body, Some Bears, and a Blade, but we'll see.
Okay.
Both would work, but I think probably some bears, because there's more than one bear.
Mm-hmm.
And those not familiar with bears, we're not talking about those out in the woods. They can be out in the woods, but that's a whole different story.
Oh, boy.
Be careful if you go for a walk in a park.
Two different kinds of podcasts.
Okay, so it's C.S. Poe that we have on and Gregory Ash. And the title of the book that they worked on together is A Friend in the Dark. And we do have a second one coming, guesstimate.
Late spring.
Okay.
Yeah, we're still editing.
Okay. And in the show notes, I'll put links to each of your websites and a link to the book directly. And off the air, you can tell me if there's anything else that you want me to link on there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There may be other links when you look on there. Well, thank you both. I had a terrible time. This was so...
Thank you, Brad.
No, this is a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Be sure to subscribe to Queer Writers of Crime wherever you hear our show. Tell a friend too. Thank you for listening.